sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
We choose directly who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Good evening, everybody. This is Will Bluewater, your host, coming to you on Blog Talk Radio on Prophecy Keepers, Oklahoma Native American Church Radio. Our guest this evening is Patricio Dominguez. He is the clan father of the Light Clan of the Big River Band of One People. He's the host of The People's News on Blog Talk with Adam Yellowberg. It's a new podcast on Blog Talk. He's well-spoken and is promoting a new tribe, the Rainbow Tribe, that's forming called the One People Tribal Nation. He's on the board of directors of the Institute of Natural and Traditional Knowledge, an educational institution devoted to creating a new culturally tolerant society. He's the founder and is on the board of directors for the Church of the Spiritual Path, which is dedicated to preserving spiritual values through healing ceremonies and observance of cultural and astrological events. He's the co-founder of the Traditional People's Medicinal Herbs, an entity organized to preserve the ancient traditional herbal knowledge of the indigenous peoples of the world. He's also past president of the Native Earth Bioculture Council, formed to plan and hold annual symposiums on food, seed sovereignty, and sustainable agriculture. Patricio has been a participant of the Elders of the Youth Council of North America since the 90s. He was the North American coordinator for the first, second, and third gatherings of the Confederation of Indigenous Elders and Priests of America, the coming together of the Eagle and the Condor that were held in Guatemala, Colombia, and the United States. And we give a hearty welcome to an honored guest, Patricio Dominguez. How are you?
Oh, my God. Good grief. Who is that guy? I'd like to meet him.
Yes.
Well, is an unbelievable list of stuff. I'm like, who is that guy?
I got that off your LinkedIn page. And I mean, if you think that's verbose, you ought to read my LinkedIn page. I think it has my history going back to first grade. But anyway, welcome, Patricio.
Okay. Then I don't feel too bad now, because I was like, oh man, that's crazy stuff. Nobody should be doing all that stuff.
I mean,
how do you cram all that into one lifetime?
I know. It's amazing. And Mark the Badger Borchardings with us this evening. And we're just gonna turn you loose to tell you what. But Mark, have you got first? Have you got any? Normally, Mark does a
Maya
first
reading. Okay, let me give Mark something to work with. Okay, Mark.
There we go.
My Mayan sign, and I will not give you the whole picture, but my Mayan sign, if you are going by the K'iche system, I am Khan. If you're going by the Yucateca system, it is Chichikan. Or if you're a dream speller, I am Serpent.
Right. Yeah. So, well, you probably, the Khan, you're probably aware that it has a lot to do with the many of the glyphs that literally looks like a seed being planted in the ground.
Wrong con. That's the other con. You're looking at what is the heck is that sign? Yeah, the one that looks like the seed is the glyph that is for the not Kamei. That is hold on, I'll get it. 1 minute. That is Kanil.
Well, I'm not
Kanil. Okay, I am. Let's see. I am the one before Kamei and after Kat.
Okay, so that's Chichikan. Yeah. Okay. So that's serpent. Okay.
Serpent.
Yeah. So yeah. Yeah. That'll connect into the Coatl. That's the last part of Quetzalcoatl. And that is so that day. Actually, that day has a connection into things, which kind of is more of kind of a helping build a kind of a internal fire and spiritual way. You can also, these things also have a tendency, people under this glyph have a tendency to be involved in things, uncovering and returning things that might have been lost or forgotten or buried somewhere. they often have, and so that's part of their, usually they tend to seek out truth, tend to, and that you, especially truth that has things that have to do with peace and justice, too, to a certain extent. So that it's a good day for people usually born in these days that have usually some ability to transfer, transmute, and translate information and wisdom. Sometimes they can do that on things that are related to ancestral knowledge of things. And so, you know, that's a, there are some other things about it. Now, one of the things on this glyph is it does relate to also, it forms a connection between the Hopi and the Maya through the twin serpents. That's in the Hopi, it's the twins of Spider Woman, and so those two serpents are sitting at the North and South Pole. And if you look at the what they call the Aztec Sunstone, right? And there's two serpents on there, so we're going different directions. And then if you look, where the tail of those two serpents comes to at the top of that stone is going to relate to the star system of the Pleiades. And that will connect into a lot of times people with the Shakan glyph, which is number 5 of the glyphs, many times they may have some kind of spiritual or linkage into the Pleiades themselves, which many of the Mayan elders talk about, Hopi elders talk about, and a lot of Cherokee elders also talk about that. So wouldn't be too surprising if a lot of your things that you're doing potentially has some roots in the star system of the Pleiades. Be a pretty good chance. And maybe even some, if you tap into it, some of the ancestral knowledge could actually go all the way back to there. So.
Oh.
Yeah, that sets up a heck of a stage, doesn't it? Boy, how in the world do you dance on that stage? yeah, it's the sign that I was born under actually does really ask a lot from a human being. But you know, it's like they say, you know, you have to you just have to pick up your tools and do what's demanded of you if you're going to be any kind of a player in the in society. You know, we each are given our tools, and we have to work with them, and we have to do a darn good job, or at least the best job that we possibly can. And it's a responsibility, it's a duty. It's so, you know, not to worry about whether the task is huge or small or whatever. Just know that that if you were born to do it, you are going to be able to do it, and don't be daunted. So anyway, I guess that's one of the reasons why all of this stuff that you heard that was being done was actually done. I really sometimes have to ask myself or ask somebody, said, well, who in the heck is driving this rig anyway? Because I look at it and I think, well, you know, I certainly couldn't do that, and I don't think anybody could. It's just,
did we lose you?
Yeah, I think he's gone.
Okay.
I don't hear him either.
Hang on a second. Just hang on. I didn't have his number queued up, and I got to cut and paste it. Get him back online here. Sorry about this, folks. Try it again. Okay, it's dialing. I wonder what happened. It says call failed or it wasn't answered. I wonder if it's, I will keep dialing. I wonder, you know, he may have lost power out there, and some people have landlines and they don't work unless, I keep getting call failed or wasn't answered.
Well,
I'll keep trying. Well, while I'm trying to get him back on the line, what have you been doing this week?
Well, I've been putting out a series of things, postings on Facebook that has to do with the Hopi Fire Clan tablet. And one of the things it shows on there, it's been going through a whole sequence of things to go through some connecting the dots between many things. It's particularly one symbol that's on there, and it's gone through an awful lot of things. If people put the read them all and put the dots together, then they can probably figure out quite a bit.
Hmm.
One of them actually just posting right tonight. It's going to give one potential understanding of the missing corner.
Really?
And it links that in with everything that's been posted so far. Why that would be, and if you look at it and see it, and then follow back through all of them, then it starts to make more sense. It's more symbolic, you know. It's got a little bit of verbiage to kind of help put the pieces together, but it's, you know, you really have to kind of follow the symbols.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that.
Well, I wonder what happened to wait a second. Okay, I think we got
on
Jack.
Cell phones, boy, I tell you what, they're about as reliable as I can't even think of anything that's unreliable. It's they will let you down just out of spite, I tell you. I really like my cell phone a lot because it's got it's got a pretty clear speaker on it and a pretty clear microphone. But
sounds good.
The cell phone towers will drop you in a heartbeat. So anyway, let's see.
Well, that's okay. If you get dropped again, we'll fill in the blanks and just keep calling you back. Don't try to call
just
it. We've had this happen before and. But anyway, I don't know where we were, but you guys go ahead and continue.
I was just talking about what an incredible thing it is to be doing all the stuff that really is required to be done at this time. You know, there is these are special times, and so. Special times, of course, call for special actions. And, I really am honored to have been born, I guess, at this time. I feel honored to have been born at this time because the effect that this time is going to have on the future is just enormous. This is the seed stage. This is the planting phase of a whole age. The things that get put down at this point in time will determine just how good the future is going to be. What we do at this time is going to... It's going to determine whether the coming age is going to be a golden age, a silver age, bronze age, or whatever. However you want to rate them. So if we put down seeds at this point in time for a golden age, we will harvest a golden age, and that is one of the jobs that we have at this time, to put down the very best that we know how to do, so that, you know, seven generations down the road, those people have something that is really good to work with. And so, consequently, I take my clues, my cues from prophecy. And as long as I feel that I have prophecy at my back, I feel very comfortable doing what I'm doing. And I know there's sometimes people say, I'm going to take, for instance, the Rainbow Warrior prophecy. I remember
when we first started talking about this new tribe, when my associates and I first got together and started formulating the idea for this new tribe, the first thing we said is, well, let's keep playing it by the book. I mean, after all, there's a whole lot of history and prayer and all these sort of things behind it, so let's go with it. Let's actually take the wind that is at our back and use it to move this forward. So we first named the tribe the Rainbow Warrior Tribe because there was a very clear and distinct prophecy call that pretty much said that there was going to emerge at approximately this time a group of people that would form a new tribe, and they would be the Warriors of the Rainbow. So it seemed like a really good idea to name the tribe the Rainbow Warrior Tribe. And so we started strategizing about it, and started putting together all the ideas that a new tribe of people would have to have, and started formulating it. We drafted up what we thought was a very, very good charter, or if you want to use another set of terms, a good set of guidelines for a new tribe that would be a mixture of the best of the old, and then, of course, that would be in touch with the present. So it would have, a little bit of the 13th century and a little bit of the 20th century in it, and we tried to meld them together to make what would look like a new tribe. And then we started advertising it. Well, immediately, there was unmeasurable backlash. First of all, it seems that, who gave you the right to start a new tribe? Where in the heck do you guys get off on this stuff? Only God can create a new tribe. I mean, you are insulting to all the tribes on the planet because, they got their mandate from the Creator and all this, and you guys, a bunch of wild and crazies, just got together and wrote up some stuff, and now you're calling yourselves a tribe. And by the way, you're claiming this prophecy, and it's not even a real prophecy. I was like, that prophecy was written up by a bunch of hippies back in the 70s, and it has no real bearing, and on and on and on and on. And so I said, whoa. Now, I didn't expect that. I mean, wow, we got flamed something fierce. So anyway, after a couple of years of enduring that, I said, no, we can't go on with this. This is insane. First of all, there's just too much baggage. There's just too much baggage with this name. And even though we can actually point to a prophecy, which I, by the way, still believe is perfectly legitimate. It's funny how the people that were saying that it wasn't a legitimate prophecy probably didn't have the experiences that I've had. I mean, I'll bet you that every one of those individuals that said that the Rainbow Warrior Tribe was an illegitimate prophecy had never been to any one of the gatherings of elders. I've been attending gatherings since the 80s.
And this thing is actually bigger in the Eastern Hemisphere than it is here because, every tribe remembers the Great Flood and the covenant that Creator made with those that survived it. It was known as the Rainbow Covenant. And they had a few laws like, don't mistreat animals, don't lie, don't cheat, steal, murder, all that kind of stuff. And pretty basic, pretty simple. But this idea goes way back before all the world's major religions, and in Israel today, the Arabs that live in Israel are signing on to a peace agreement because they know that they have a common ancestor in Noah, and once they were reminded of it, they said, "Hey, this is a good idea. Let's have some peace."
Yes, there is a recognition among the elders of the legitimacy of this prophecy. However, you know, there is among Native Americans who don't have the memory or aren't completely tied to the deeper aspects of their culture, there's a certain denial about some of these things like this prophecy of the Rainbow Warrior tribe emerging, because actually they're in such a state of just trying to preserve their own tribe and their own culture that they actually look at this startup group as some kind of a usurper, because you know in order you know it's a strange kind of mental game. It's like in order for us to be legitimate, they have to be illegitimate or something along those lines. Kind of reminds me of the situation that religions had, and some of them still have this kind of mindset, although I think they're getting over it. But everybody wanted their religion to be the one true religion. So in order for my religion to be the one true religion, everybody else's religion had to be false. And so, you know, the immediate, and so when somebody says, "Well, I'm from such and such a religion," it's like, "Oh, well, you know, that's a false religion. You really ought to convert to our religion because it is the true religion, and you know, you are part of some kind of a false religion thing." Well, I think there's a little bit of that in the problem that we had when we were trying to present ourselves as the Rainbow Warrior tribe. It was like, "Oh my gosh, you know, you guys can't be real. You're a hippie dream of some sort." And that prophecy that you're referring to, you know what, it can't be real. You know, if it was real, I would have heard about it because I am a Native American and I never really heard about it until recently. And usually it seems to be coming from a bunch of hippies and not from our elders. But like I said, I have been to the elders' gatherings. In fact, I was allowed to even join the elders' council back in the 90s. I have talked to the elders, I mean the real elders, and they know. They know what's going on. So I knew that I really did have something, a real wind at our back. But it was way too difficult to wade through this incredible backlash that we were picking up. And then there was this other little problem about the symbol of the rainbow. I mean, it got confused with the LG, whatever, the lesbians, gays, and transgenders, because they adopted the rainbow as their image. So then that baggage got thrown into the mix, and then it added an additional layer to the thing. So what we did is, after a few years of struggling with that, we changed the name.
Do you remember back in the early 80s? When everybody had a rainbow hanging from their rearview mirror?
Yes, I do.
Oh, well, the new age movement co-opted it back then. And so, I mean, it's all through. That's probably the reason why a lot of traditionals, they're neo-traditionals, are not really plugged into their own culture. They look askance at it because it was associated with new age. And then, you know, with LGBT and so they're not educated yet, and that's what we're trying to do is bring about them to remember these things.
And that's a real thing. Actually, it is new age. But see, that was the thing that they couldn't wrap their head around is that. They really couldn't wrap their head around that they all of us were moving into a new age. a lot of Native America didn't want to go into a new age. What they wanted to do was a resurgence of the old age. They wanted 1491 to come back.
It's
and
coming.
That's what they were praying for. And the idea that, you know, the things were going to take off in a different direction certainly was not in their wishes and dream list, because they were hoping that they could go back and start living like their ancestors lived, and that particular world was going to come back. But, you know, time waits for nobody. Ages come and ages go, and our ancestors had their time and their place. Now we, their children, have to deal with the age that we were born into, and we have to make it as good an age for us as they made their age for them. And their age and their life and their worldview and all that was appropriate for the age that they lived in. It is for us now to create an appropriate worldview, lifestyle, culture for the age that we live in that is appropriate for these times. And these times are way different. If you're any kind of got any kind of a scientific mind, you'll know the vibratory rate is completely different. The human consciousness has moved into a new space. That we are not the people that our great-great grandmothers and fathers were. We are a different people. And they gave us some pretty good values to work from, and we need to build on those, but we need to do just that. We need to build on them for something that's appropriate to these times. I mean, even if the only thing that we have to deal with is the fact that we are in a new climate. I mean, it's just factoring just one little tidbit, just climate change. Our ancestors didn't have to deal with the climate that we are living in, because the climate has changed from that point to this point. And as anybody knows, humans have to live in harmony and in balance with the environment that they live in, and that includes the climate. So we're going to have to make some adjustments. I mean, just even in the homes that we live in, we have to make adjustments, because, you know, we have to deal with a whole different climate structure, and then I'm not even mentioning all the other changes that are going on. So it's pretty daunting, and that's why I suppose, like you call them, the neo-traditionalists, were having a fit, because what we were doing just didn't fit into their wishes and dreams list, because they were hoping to go back, and that of course is just not going to happen, because, like I said, we're moving forward, and as Mark said, you know what? We're not driving this bus. There are forces out there driving this bus. He mentioned that perhaps the Pleiades are in the mix too, and the Pleiadians. They certainly aren't going to try to put us back into the 13th century. They're trying to put us in harmony and balance with the 21st century and the sixth sun, and which for us to unfold this thing, and that's what we're trying to do, and that's one of the reasons why I continue to work with this new tribe thing. And we named it One People Tribal Nation, which kind of says the same thing. You know, it's not the, you know, it doesn't say rainbow anymore, but, you know, if you think about it, one people implies the same thing. It implies that we are dealing with human beings regardless of their skin color, or their former culture, because now we're trying to come together and create a new culture that is appropriate for this time and this place. And of course, you know, there has to be some guidelines. I mean, let's face it, we have to create a culture that is going to be planet appreciating, that is going to be sustainable, and, you know, has to actually be very good for humans too. I mean, I'm pretty sure we could create a culture that is completely safe for all the plants and animals on the planet. But then again, would it be completely safe for the humans? Because, you know, the humans have certain needs and all that, so that has to be balanced too. But we all have to work together on some level. We all have to work together, and I think the trick is to be conscious and mindful. Now, this is something that we are going to take from the ancestors. The ancestors were conscious. They were mindful. They were very much aware that they were on a living being, much like the bacteria and the other things that live in the human being's guts are a living thing inside of a larger living thing, and they have their own ecosystem and all of that. But they are very mindful of the fact that they cannot destroy their human host. They have a certain consciousness. Well, human beings have to come to that kind of consciousness. Human beings have to be aware that they are an entity living on another entity, and if they destroy their host, well, their lifespan is going to be significantly shortened, and that is something we have got to bring from our past and from our ancestors, because our ancestors said we live on Mother Earth. They knew, they had the awareness that planet Earth is a living entity, and that they are just parts and parcels of it. In fact, they're actually a dependent. They are dependent on the mother for their existence. They are like the human beings are kind of like the bacteria that live in the guts of a human being. As long as the parent, the host, is healthy, they can thrive and survive. But as long as our Mother Earth, the entity we call Earth, is a healthy entity, we are going to thrive and survive. But should we get silly and instead of being beneficial bacteria in the gut of Mother Earth and start becoming a cancer and we destroy her, wow, this does not fare well for our future. And, you know, this whole thing of Earth being a living entity and having an identity, and that's another thing. Because Mother Earth is a living entity, Mother Earth has a consciousness too. In Mother Earth's consciousness, and this is where, you know, you have to really stretch your human abilities a little bit. If Mother Earth has a consciousness and is self-aware, then Mother Earth knows that she has cosmic sisters and brothers. So there, Earth has a sister, has a brother, and in fact has a whole family, which the humans call the solar system, because they always, I mean, right now the current set of humans, you know, kind of think in very non-living kind of minds, in a non-living kind of mindset. But every one of those planets out there also has a consciousness. They too are living beings, and these larger beings that we are not all that clearly aware of, they communicate with each other in their own way, and they have a family relationship. We have to put all of this into perspective as we move into this new age and try to imbue it in the generations to come. Our ancestors gave us a clue. They gave us a head start. They said we are related to the plants and the animals, and that we are children of Mother Earth. Well, with that as our starting seed, we have to expand our consciousness even further to recognize, now, wait a minute, Mother Earth, oh, gee, that's a living thing. I mean, that sort of implies a living thing. And from what we have learned through the modern wisdom of science is that every living thing has a consciousness and probably some level of self-awareness. Again, that opens up that big door to, oh, my gosh, maybe Mother Earth has brothers and sisters out there, and maybe they're aware, too, of what's going on. They have a stake in the game, and that's why the Pleiades and all the Pleiadians, all of this, have a stake in the game, because the whole thing is connected on a consciousness level that humans are just barely starting to awaken to, and has to be expanded even further, because if we've done some real damage in the last 300-400 years to the health of this planet, of this entity, and we're going to have to really step it up quite a lot if we're going to help this entity heal. And it really behooves us to step up our game to help this entity heal, because if we don't help this entity heal, well, we're not going to make it. And that's another story. Because there are futures that don't include human beings, and that's something, another thing that humans don't want to deal with. Okay, you probably have, from reading the bio, kind of get a clue that I am a shaman. I was initiated at the age of 5 to be this. And so there's a whole lot of information that has come between age 5 and age 65 that has come into my consciousness. And one of the things that a shaman that actually has some level of community built around them is, in a shaman's community, there is his associates. Some of my associates I call my dreamers. My dreamers tell me their dreams. And some of them are prophetic. Not all of them. Some of my dreamers' dreams are just dreams, or they're very present-oriented. But some of the dreams that my dreamers have brought to me are dreams of futures possible. And I will call them just that, because they're all possible. Human beings, like I said, have a stake in the game. They can make things not happen or happen depending on how they react. Well, some of my dreamers have brought me dreams of futures of planet Earth that do not include human beings. One of my dreamers brought me a dream, very, very specific, of a beautiful planet where there that was rich in flora and fauna that had the healthiest species that she had ever seen. There was beautiful birds. There was just an abundance of deer-like creatures and all sorts of wonderful living things. It was a virtual Garden of Eden. She described this in great detail, a world that I would love to live in. I would even love to see it in reality. She described this world to me, and after she'd gone through all the great details of, you know, the birds and the different flowers and all the animals that she had seen in this dream, then she said, "Oh, there was no humans." And I said, "Well, gee, do you have an idea how far down the road this is?" She says, "Oh, yes, this, I know exactly when this is." And she said, "In my dream, I could see I could see like a calendar-like thing." And she said it was in the year 3500 something. And I don't remember what it was, 35, 35, 35, 25, something, you know, something like that. But there was this beautiful, beautiful future that she had seen in one of her dreams for planet Earth. And it did not include humans. But it included some very beautiful, some very harmonious, some very enviable creatures. They lived in a really, really good space. And I would have loved to have been part and parcel of that wonderful, wonderful space and time. But alas, not in that future. But I've seen, you know, those not the only future dream that I have seen, or I should say that I have been presented with by my dreamers. So human beings really, really have to get a lot more conscious of what they're doing. And one of the ways that me and my associates have tried to do this, because armed with the information that I have, I want to make the future safe for human beings. I like human beings. I am a human being, and I have a certain egocentric connection to them. I really think that they're a creature worthy of existence. In its finest form, the human being is a very special creature, probably unlike any other creature that has ever walked this planet before. It is in fact a marvel, because no other creature has the level of awareness of its existence that the human being has. You know, I know you've heard this phrase before. It's like, the people have to start living with their original instructions. You know, you've heard this phrase, the original instructions. Well, every creature on this planet has a very, very clear set of original instructions. Birds come out of the egg, and they know north from south. Other creatures come out of the womb, and they know all instinctively where to hide, where to run, what to eat, what not to eat, their original instructions are indelibly imprinted in them, but not so human beings. Human beings have a very open-ended set of original instructions. They get to write some of their original instructions based on the situations that they find themselves in. So whenever you hear that term, original instructions, it applies very, very strongly to a lot of creatures on this planet, and it applies somewhat to human beings. And the ancestors interpreted a lot of what they were able to pull out of them, out of their coding, and create a set of instructions that they are following, calling them the original instructions. But it behooves us, the people that are planting the seeds for the new age, to write the original instructions for the seventh generation that's coming. This is our job. This is the task of the moment, is to write the original instructions for the seventh generation coming. And the way that my associates and I are doing this is by creating this opportunity of reinventing a tribe that has previously not existed, a tribe made up of people that previously have either been untribed, but actually nobody's really been untribed, but people that have lost tribe, but now because of the circumstances that we live in, are finding themselves compelled to work together with someone. So they are looking for tribe, and many of them have approached us, the Native Americans, to ask us to adopt them into our tribes. But even this is as worthy or as noble as that would be, that is not the job at hand. Our job is not to turn other people into Cherokees, Navajos, or Apaches, or whatever. Our job, the enlightened ones among us, our job is to assemble these people that are looking to be tribal into the tribe that they are, the tribe that the prophecy says that is coming. They are the ones. They are the ones they've been waiting for. They are the ones that we've been waiting for, although somewhat reluctantly, because when our prophecies say that when this new tribe shows up, it implies that, you know, the old system is dying and we're moving into a new age. Some fear the new. Some of us embrace the new. But usually there is a reluctance about the news. Some people don't like change. They really are so comfortable with the way things are and the way things were that they just want to stay with that. And the idea of things changing and a new tribe appearing raises a certain fear and doubt in them, and they want to squash it. They want to stop it. But, you know, the wind is at their back. The prophecies all say, the eagle and condor prophecy. The eagle and the condor prophecy is one of those prophecies that cannot be denied. It spans the Americas. You go as far south as you want to go, and you're going to find somebody down there talking about the eagle condor prophecy. Everybody knows about it. And when you poke at it and you open it up, it says something to the effect that when the eagle and the condor fly together, that a new world is going to emerge. Now, you don't get all the details of this new world, but you know that something new is coming. Well, some of the other lesser prophecies are the unpacking of this greater prophecy. the new tribe is a component of the eagle and the condor flying together. The elders of the north and the elders of the south are going to have to come together, start working together, and start agreeing and accepting that there is going to be a new tribe of people. It is in their prophecies. This is part of the change. And that these new people, they'll be fledgling, they'll be young, they'll be stupid, they'll be a little bit awkward, just like everything that's born is a little bit wobbly on its legs when it first gets started. This new tribe is going to be a little wobbly, but you know what? We're going to have to accept it. We're going to have to nurture it. And most of all, we're going to have to respect it. And part of that will just be acceptance. Just accept that they're coming along and they're going to be players in the game. So at this coming gathering that Adam is hosting, called the Eagle, the Condor, and the Quetzal, is part of the, you know, it's amazing. I don't know if he even knows, but he's part of the prophecy. He's another one of the prophets, but you know, he just thinks he's being faithful to the calls of the elders. But he's way more than that. He's way more than that. He is setting up the sixth or fifth sun, depending on which system you belong to, by bringing together the eagle, the condor, and the Quetzal. But you know, if you're a Native American, that's an unvalid system. Native America knows everything comes in fours. There's an eagle, the condor, and a Quetzal. Well, where's that other bird? What's that other tribe? Why, gee, it must be the One People Tribal Nation, or the whatever you want to call it, the Rainbow Warriors, or whatever. You know, and maybe there'll be one, maybe there'll be two or three of these new tribes. It doesn't matter.
Let me share something with you.
The fourth bird.
Let me share something with you. In the Eastern Abrahamic tradition, things go in fours too. But a lot of times, one of them is hidden. You've got three that work right out in the open. And the fourth is there. Just for instance, like in, you know, this issue about, you know, making a new tribe. Well, you know, the Hopi say that's going to happen, that they're going to form a new tribe. And also the Great Law, the Haudenosaunee Great Law, says, you know, anybody that disagrees with what's going on in their village has got a right to vote with their feet and go form a new tribe. So, but yeah, I wanted to add those couple ideas.
Yes, and as you just pointed out, the wind is at the back of this. I mean, you just pointed out three different tribes that basically are saying this is inevitable, this is coming, and so one of the things that I'm going to be pressing for at this gathering of the eagle, the condor, and the Quetzal is to remind the elders, that this is happening, that this is coming, and to start preparing, or maybe even start directly accepting this new tribe and not to speak against it in any way, shape, or form. In fact, to actually encourage it in any way that they possibly can. Because the sooner we plant the seeds for this new era, the sooner those seeds will bear fruit. And there is no time like the present to do this. Because when are we going to get another opportunity to press this issue? Do you know how hard it is to put on one of these gatherings of elders? I mean, just the logistics of it are unbelievable. first of all, if you're going to gather elders together, you're going to need a ton of money. I mean, let's face it, the elders can't get themselves to a gathering. So that means you have to buy airline tickets for them. And then you have to feed them. You have to accommodate them. And then, you know, you have to provide space for them to meet. There is a whole lot of logistics that go into it. There is no way you can bring the elders from South America, from North America, and Central America together, you know, for anything less than $10,000 or $15,000. And you know what? And I'm just being really, really lowball here. I mean, this is a gathering maybe of 5 or 6 elders, because I mean, a plane ticket from South America to the United States costs $1,000. You bring 5 elders from South America together, that's $5,000. You haven't even bought food for them yet. And then you bring in 5 or 6 elders from North America. Okay, maybe it's not $1,000 to bring somebody from California or whatever, but it's $600 or $700. Okay, so you do that, and then there's another $5,000. That's $10,000. Now you have to bring Central America in. Well, the money is starting to really, really stack up. And then, you know, there's all the logistics. You know, you still have to get everybody to agree to come together, and you have to give them a good reason to come together, and then they have to be disposed to do it, and some of them are going to be reluctant because they'll say, well, no, I have to take care of my own people. I really don't have time to go to any meetings. You know, my people really, really need me or whatever. And so getting these things together is really, really a challenge. So if anybody wants to try and hold a gathering of the elders just to talk about the new tribe, maybe down the road, they're really in for a serious, serious test of will and ability. So it really behooves us to take advantage of situations like this, Eagle Condor Quetzal gathering, to press the issue of the new tribe, and other issues, you know, that, of course, all the other issues, because that's another thing. Yes, I'm going to launch into another one of my favorite kind of beliefs is, as human beings, yeah, that was it. It dovetails back into what I was saying. The human being is a very, very special creature on this planet right now, because of the awareness that the human being has the potential of having, the word human sums it up so perfectly. If you look at take the word human apart, you find the word hue and you find the word man. Now, if you look at man as being basically the meat suit, and as hue being, that word translates into light, by the way, as the spirit, a human is a symbiotic relationship of spirit and flesh. It is at the same moment a beast and a spirit coexisting simultaneously, symbiotically, a very special, unique situation, because we, as conscious spirits, have the opportunity to be just spiritual. I mean, just spirits. Don't need those stinking meat suits. And then the beast, the man, really doesn't need no spiritual aspect. It can eat, drink, and be merry all at once and not even think about being spiritual. But a true human has the ability to simultaneously be aware of their humanness and their manness and keep them functioning together, walking together simultaneously, and enjoying the benefits of the awareness of these things simultaneously. So a human can eat, drink, and be merry, and at the same time be aware of the infinite possibilities of being a spirit. Because after all, I mean, why in the world would a spirit who is infinite and unbounded, before it comes into the meat suit, and then after the meat suit fails, it goes back out into the infinite unbounded, why would it even bother to have that little short period of being confined to a meat suit? Why? Well, because it's a very unique situation. But the challenge, of course, is when you come in and drop into the meat suit and you kind of put it on, you forget. You have a temporary lapse of memory, or you get so enthralled by the madness of your new situation that you sometimes forget that you are spiritual. And so you start living as a beast and forget that you actually once were infinite, and that at the end of the game that you're going to be infinite again. But a real human being is aware that they are simultaneously infinite and finite simultaneously, and can enjoy the finite moment consciously aware of their infinite selves. And a real human being, a real fully developed human being, is that a being that is conscious of its infinite and finite value simultaneously. An incomplete human being will be skewed too much to one side or the other. Now, you can be skewed towards the man and just become, a hedonist. Or you can become too spiritual and just become a yogic saint that lives in a cave up in the Himalayas and chants Om all day, and you make, you're of no value to society or to the rest of humanity, because in fact, why even bother to wear the meat suit? I mean, after all, you're acting like a spirit. You might as well just be a spirit. Just leave the dang meat suit and get back to where you came from or where you want to go. No, a real human being is simultaneously aware of their physicalness and their spiritualness. But then again, if you get real spiritual, you got to remember to start acting on the material plane too. Don't deny your manness. And if you're going to not deny your manness, you're going to have some level of community. You're going to have to dance. You're going to have to sing. You're going to have to do a ceremony with your brothers and sisters. You're going to have to do some three-dimensional stuff. You're going to have to act like a creature. You know, you're going to have some kind of community, and that's where the tribalness comes in. You know, the beasts, they have tribe. All the beasts, you know, if they're allowed to be in their natural state, all form their clans and their societies and all that, because that's man. You know, that's the material aspect of the material world. Living creatures that are aware of their material selves naturally tend to want to be clannish and be social and those sort of things. And it's the spirit that lives in the infinite, unbounded, and kind of, you know, can exist in the oneness. But human beings have the opportunity to do both in consciousness. And that's another thing that we have, another value that the new tribe has to pick up. In fact, I think it should be a nice thing that some of the old tribes picked it up too, to remember that, you know, it's not all just hunting and gathering. You know, the ceremonies are there to remind the meat suit that it is that it has a spiritual component. And more often is better, or at least once a day, the minimum, because it's really easy to get seduced by the physicality and all the sensations of being a physical being. So let's see, what else can I talk about?
I'll bet you'll figure it out.
Yes, okay. So anyway,
I was going to say, Mark, you got any ideas?
Well, no, it's just I think that the problem that he talks about in terms of, you know, starting a new tribe, I think a lot of these elders and people already have enough problems with their old tribes getting together. I mean, look, even within a tribe, I mean, you have a lot of problems and protocols, politics, and all kinds of stuff, and they have enough trouble even within some single tribes getting together and unifying. So,
well, especially since they came into the federal system, you know.
Oh,
which, yeah, that, you know, that's, they're not, you know, Congress controls commerce of Indian tribes. Commerce,
yep.
You know, and so they have no freedom. They can't even elect their own leaders without, I mean, they can elect them, but they got to get, you know, approval of the BIA. All their elections are called secretary elections, so, you know, they're not allowed to be themselves.
And that's a key point. Thank you for bringing that up, Will. That is really a key point. The tribes that we see today are not our ancestors' tribes. Our ancestors' tribes were living by what, you know, they have determined was their, I just said the phrase a while ago, their internal guidance, their, what did I call that earlier? The original instructions. The original instructions. The tribes of today are not living by the original instructions. The tribal systems, politics, the structure, the tribal structures of today are not part of the original instructions. The United States of America forced upon the tribal people an alien political system, and they are trying their best to live within it, but of course failing miserably because it's not their system. So how in the world can they possibly live in peace and harmony in a system that they don't, that doesn't really even belong to them? I am quite sure that once the people are allowed to go back to the systems that they are comfortable with, that they have an innate connection to, that a lot more harmony is going to be available. To see, I've, being a member of Elders Council, I have watched this very, very difficult dance between the traditionalists and the non-traditionalists. I know it's really, really difficult. Like whenever we wanted to have a meeting at any one of the tribes, with any one of the tribes, it was a real difficult dance because the elders, of course, the traditional elders, had no problem with holding a gathering at their reservation. But then they also then had to go to the tribal council,
the business
council,
and try
to get this thing all approved. Well, the tribal council, you know, was like, oh, well, I don't know. You know, you're talking about a gathering of Indians. Oh, my God, the BIAs, I don't like it. Oh, my God, this is kind of scary. You know, last time elders got together, it was a massacre. It was, you know, like, this is dangerous. You know, they're going to be accused of this. We're going to be accused of this, that, and the other thing. And so, you know, and everybody was pulling for their survival. Basically, the non-traditionalists want to stay in the good graces of the U.S. government, and the traditionalists want to stay in the good graces of the original instructions and the Creator. Well, those two don't work well. They don't work well with each other because they have two different agendas. They're not working in harmony. So, as long as there is this dichotomy of traditionalists and non-traditionalists, you are going to have problems within a tribe. And I really think that once this is resolved. In fact, actually, this may be an opportunity for the new tribe to pave the way. The new tribe just might be able to bridge that gap easier than the old tribe, because one thing about the new tribe is it's not going to have the traditionalists trying to pull their way, because the traditionalists, of course, don't exist. They're going to have to create a system of government and guidance that is compatible with the circumstances that they live in. So they're going to form a government that is simultaneously compatible with the United States and also compatible with their own internal values. So they are going to find out a way to live sustainably and still live within the rules and structures of the United States government. They are going to find a way to live a life that is appreciative of the planet that they live on, and without running afoul of the U.S. government. They have to. It's where they're coming from. They are going to put this thing together, and it is going to be in harmony. Of course, they're going to have to make some serious adjustments. Let's face it. They are, they're not going to have the 3.5 bathroom house with the central heating system. I mean, that just isn't sustainable. A 12,000 square foot home just cannot be kept comfortable and the planet survive. That just isn't going to work. There are going to have to be some compromises. But the new people, the new tribe, are aware of this. I mean, if you talk to them, they are already thinking ecologically. They already are on some kind of an agenda where they recognize that they have to live in some kind of a sustainable way. And of course, they're already very mindful of the fact that they live in the United States, or whatever country they live in, because I think this new tribe isn't going to be confined to the United States. There is untribed people on every continent, and every one of these continents is going to have to develop their new tribes, because the old tribes aren't going to be able to absorb all the untribed people. So new tribes are going to be formed, but they're going to be formed based on the environment that they live in. So, this is going to be the way of the future. And the North American people, I think North America will lead the way in this. I think the first real solid new tribe is going to be formed here in North America, and will be the model for the new tribes that will spring up throughout the rest of the world. Something about North America does that. I mean, the United States government that sprung up here in North America managed to affect all the other cultures in the world. You know, there is you can't go anywhere without seeing some aspect of U.S. culture in that part of the world. Well, I think the latest thing coming out of North America is going to be tribal culture, and it will be a new age, 21st century, fifth sun culture that is going to spread across the planet, and humanity will survive, or not, because I already alluded to the possibility that they won't. But you know what? I'm not going to go down that easy. I'm not going to say, oh, my dreamers already told me we didn't make it, so I'm just going to kind of just play it out for the rest of my life, and I'll just kind of every once in a while sing my song of warning and let it go. No, I'm going to be very active and aggressive in fomenting, promoting a possible future for human beings into the future. So that is what I am That is what I'm trying to do. And if you read my you know, from the bio, it's like I've been doing this for a long time. I started out a medicine society that was trying to bring back the old knowledge of herbal remedies. I started a school called the Institute of Natural and Traditional Knowledge. I have organized a church that is based on the spiritual teachings of the Native Americans. I have no choice, basically. I'm a Native American, and I am very traditional. I actually don't really come from a strong background in any one of the isms that is popular in the world today. My parents had me, like I said, ordained as a medicine person at age 5. So, you know, there is some tendency to move towards some of the older ways. And I actually, for my own and my associates' protection, organized us as a church so that we would not be, hassled, or whatever the current phrase is, by the system about our activities. Because we wanted to maintain our activities, but we also wanted to have the protection that was required. And that's another aspect of the new tribe. The new tribe will do whatever it takes to make sure that it is going to be connected, or is going to be safe within the confines of the government that it lives in. So who knows? This new tribe may just be a multinational corporation. and that's the way it will be presented. And as a multinational corporation, it will have all sorts of protections and be able to live in this world safely without enjoying all the protections that multinational corporations enjoy, and still be able to express its culture, because nothing says that a multinational corporation has to be planet damaging or planet. Oh my God, what's that racket? Oh well, planet detrimental. So there is a way into the future if we simply keep promoting it. And this is what I'm doing. I am promoting a sustainable, planet appreciating culture that will take humanity into the future, and it will be through some kind of a new tribal consciousness. And that's pretty much my song right now. That's the strong song that I'm singing. I really all the stuff about organizing the elders and all of that, which of course that was a past mission. Okay, there was a past mission, but all that today is really the only reason I am working with elders today is to make space for the elders of the new tribe, because they're going to need to be accepted, and I have to remind. We have to remind the elders that may be coming from an older space that it is in their best interest and in their prophecies that this is coming, so that they will not work against it in any way, shape, or form, and in some way actually nourish it.
Yep, that's what needs to be done. And by the way, if you're out there and you'd... got a few minutes left. If you'd like to call and talk with Patricio, number to call is 347-996-3318. And we'll meet a minute or two. If we don't get any callers, we'll sign off. But we really appreciate you coming on. And we want to tell everybody about your show on Blog Talk. It's called The People's News. There is a link to it from the blurb on this show, also to your Earth People Nation Facebook website. And it doesn't look like we've got any takers. Mark, you got any final questions?
Well, I think the key to all this, with not just the new tribe, but maybe it especially, but is what he was saying is one of the key things here is a balance between spirit and people, physical and spiritual. And that's always seems to be the part that we're struggling with.
That's right.
So
and
I think that's a key component of how a new tribe, or not even new, but anything is that's going to work. And even with the things in our thing about, you know, our technology, all of our stuff about, well, we don't have enough. We don't have enough power. We don't have enough electricity. We don't have enough. Well, we do have enough. We just don't have the right technology. That's all. And some of that's been, we know, has been hidden from us, you know, Tesla and other people's stuff. So we know that there is a technology that is also like this. It has a spiritual component and it has a physical component. And so if we look to those and figure out how to do this, how do these people, you know, that do healing across, you know, these Qigong masters that can heal someone for like 2 or 5,000 miles away, or the Hawaiians, what, the kahunas, right? Apparently they're able to switch timelines. So there's some spiritual to physical technology that quantum science and stuff is also talking about that we're coming up to speed with real fast. And this is also forming a bridge between the old understanding, like when you say travel without a suitcase, and a spiritual teleportation. So I think that's where the key is moving in all this, is to where we learn how to do that and come in to a balance. This is the thing the Hopi talk about too, and many of the Native peoples talk about a balance, how to balance things, and this is the key one, spiritual and physical.
Well, say prayers for our physicists, because and our we have astrophysicists coming to elders now up in New York. They're beginning to you know, through their use of mathematics, they're beginning to figure out what we've been saying is true, and they're starting to come to us saying, where on earth did you get this information? And let's sign off, and we'll see everybody next week. And thanks, Patricio.
You're welcome, Hope. But there's one more thing. I mean, you give me a moment to think, and all of a sudden the thing opens up. There is one thing that I wanted to touch on, and probably something I should have opened with, but then that's okay. It doesn't matter, just as long as it gets put on the record. Now, a long time ago, 1391, I'll use as a date, there was about 2 million Native Americans on this planet. I mean, yeah, in North America. Just in North America. And then when the other group showed up, they brought diseases and all these sort of things that kind of took our numbers down into the 100,000 range, or maybe even less. And then sometime like in the 30s or 40s, I'm not sure exact date, all of a sudden one of our Native American prophets had this inspiration, or maybe he was preparing for these times. I'm not sure, you know, how this stuff works, but Creator works in his own way. He started a movement to bring back the old member of the old residents of this of the Americas. He started something called the Ghost Dance, and it caught on. A lot of people started praying for the return of the ancestors, the return of the people that used to be here, and there was millions of them. And then there was a couple million more that was born between the time that the people got disseminated to the time that the Ghost Dance started happening. Another 1 or 2 million natives were born into the system. Well, the ghost dance was a prayer to, for these people to come back. Lo and behold, those prayers worked. The,
yep.
The people are coming back. All these people that are coming back thinking about, thinking tribally, they're our ancestors. We called them back. We have to remember that. We deliberately called them back, and now that they've come back, we have to accept them. Now, it's unfortunate they couldn't be, they couldn't come back into our families because our tribes weren't big enough to hold them, but they came back anyway, and they came back into white families, into black families, into yellow families, into all these other families, but they came back because we called them, and they have all of their old awakenings, or their own, all their own, all their old memories. They want to, they want to be, they want to live in the way that they remember was peaceful and loving and kind, and they just want to live in the old way because they are the old ones. So these people that are talking new tribe and tribal living and all of these, maybe even the ones that are talking about sustainable culture and being, you know, talking Mother Earth, well, the reason they're doing this is because they are the people that, that we recognize as the ancestors. They knew about these things, and it is a lingering memory in their consciousness of how things used to be, and they want it to come back. So let's remember that we called them back, and let's welcome them in a really, really, let's welcome them back, in a good way, because after all, we did call them, and as hosts that invited them, by golly, we really, really need to be really, really good hosts and not turn them away and, or discourage them in any way, shape, or form, because, well, we called for them. So that is the way I see, or is one of the reasons I see that there is this movement. I mean, yes, there's the prophecy and all of that, but if this all meshes together, prophecies, prayers, all of this meshed together to form this incredible situation that we find ourselves in, that I think is just going to be just marvelous. So that is probably the way I want to leave the closing statement is let's make room for our ancestors.
Yeah, and that's an interesting concept because the Jews believe that the 600,000 that went on the Exodus out of Egypt have been being reborn. So, yeah, I never thought about the ghost dance in 1890. You know, and by 1960, you know, you've got, the fulfillment of the prophecy that the children of the yellow, the grandchildren of the yellow hair would come to us to want to learn wisdom, and it's because of who they are. So, yeah, it gives you a whole new idea of, and Native people have learned real well, a lot of them, about how to be xenophobic and, you know, afraid of people that are different, but... But anyway, appreciate you coming on, Patricio.
I appreciate you having me on, and I hope that I didn't scare away your traditional listeners, because a lot of what I said was way off the traditional path. But like I said, this is a new time, and it's important that we get with it.
Oh yeah, you know, and we do have some, you know, very traditional. Like we have some Cree medicine men that listen to this, and you know, one was a guest a while back, and he calls in once in a while. So, yeah, you're not off track, but appreciate you being on. We'll let everybody go.
thank you, everyone, and blessings and beauty, and we'll talk again sometime.
I hope.
Good night.
Good night, now. Good night, everybody.
Join us to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
So that I may remember.